Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. In this podcast, we open with a chat with Mindvention co-chairman Danny Archer, who has just come off of a long European tour, and he tells us what it's like on the road, plus a little of his ups and downs. He also gives us a report on the Mindvention that's coming up this fall. For those listeners who look forward to my daily updates from the Mindvention, I will not be attending this year or reporting from Las Vegas, so you will have to register and get your first-hand experience on your own. Jim Steinmeier was hanging out at the Genie booth, so we talked about his collaboration with Alex Ramone about his newest illusion, plus his work on the Broadway play Aladdin. Gabe Fiore with Potter & Potter Auctions tells us about the upcoming August 23rd auction featuring the Houdini memorabilia. Then we go to the FISM North American Championships competition where Bill Evans is the MC and I come on stage to conduct an interview during the bits in between the acts. Back at the dealer's room, I chat with Philip Pound, who is the son-in-law of Pat Page, and Pat's daughter, Jeanette, about the production of the book Page by Page. I catch up with David Silly Billy Kay to see what he's been up to since we talked together on the Magic Newswire. And finally, Rick Heath was one of the integral people in the Le Grand David show. Rick talks about the sale of the Cabot Street Theater and what some of the people are doing now since Cesario's death. All this and more are on the podcast from Day 3 of the IBM-SAM Combined Convention in St. Louis, here on the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Meet me in St. Louis, meet me at the fair. Don't tell me the lights are shining.
Well, good morning. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. And it's, I think I call this day three. It is July the 3rd here on Thursday, which is Magic and Martini Thursday. We're going to start off the magic here with Danny Archer. Hey, good buddy. How are you doing?
Good. Good morning, Scott.
I wanted to talk with you just about your great lecture, a tour that you just wrapped up over in Europe. When did you start that, actually?
Oh, my word. It was so long ago, I barely remember.
It
was
seems like a lifetime ago.
It started in June.
Okay. Wow.
Maybe even the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been on the road for, this is my 73rd day, consecutive day, being on the road.
On the road. You've not been home?
I have not been home in 73 days. I did 30 lectures in 6 countries in Europe,
yep.
And then I also produced the first European Mentalism Convention, the Mind Summit, in Cologne, Germany.
In Cologne. How was that?
That went excellent. It went really well. We had people from 22 countries around the world, 130-plus people.
That's better than Mindvention attendance.
That's a little bit better than Mindvention, or close to.
Close to, yeah.
But it was really an exceptional event. Everybody loved it, and we're doing it again next year.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And who were some of the people who were starring in this, some of the talent from that?
Well, we had, from America, we had Richard Osterling.
Mm-hmm.
We had Peter Turner.
He's going to be starring this year.
He's going to be at Mindvention this year. We had Peter Turner, who will also be at Mindvention this year. Peter Turner from the UK, who was fabulous. We had Colin McLeod from Scotland. That was great. Then we had people that the Americans listening might not know. We had Jan Becker, who's like the Derren Brown of Germany.
Yeah.
He's a big star. Major star. He was absolutely fabulous. We had Florian Severin, another German performer that was, you're going to see him at Mindvention. I loved his performance. We had Dr. Knut Knacksteg from Germany, who did something on Bizarre Magic. He was fabulous as well. And then we had, you know, some other events and dealers and panel discussions and things of that
similar
nature.
Similar to the Mindvention.
Similar
type
to
of
Mindvention,
program.
Right? Okay. But just in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
The hotel was a little more, not a little more, definitely a more classier hotel, and there were lunches involved and food and drinks and coffee.
It's all included with the registration.
Yeah, different, but registration was a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a lot less for the Mindvention because you get a great deal on the hotel. The
exactly,
Cal Station.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they got great deals on food, and they got the dollar hamburgers and
exactly
during the football games and everything. And so the lectures that you were going around and giving. I assume, first of all, let me go back to the convention in Cologne, that English was the primary language?
English was the language. Okay. Nothing was interpreted. Everything was in English, which is a decision that we made because 22 countries represent.
Sure.
We can't have 22. It's not the UN.
Right.
So everything is in English.
It's like air traffic control. It's all
exactly.
In English.
Exactly. Okay. That's the language of air traffic control, and English is the language of, the Mind Summit in Cologne.
Right. And so when you were touring, though, I'm assuming that you had translators for your lecture?
Yes. Yeah, some cities, yes and no. Vienna, no translation in Vienna. Mm-hmm. Some places in Germany, no translation. In France, translation. And some places in Belgium. And it depends on the city. And I can do it either way.
Now, without sliding any of the cities, were there some cities or some things that you enjoyed more, that maybe stuck out in your mind, or something that was like a highlight of the convention that you enjoyed?
Yeah, there's obviously, everybody, every city had something to offer.
Sure.
Everything was interesting and neat, but there were some
so
places,
hospitable, I found it. Yeah.
When they really treat you, the difference between lecturing in Europe and in America, a lot of times I would go there, if they don't have their own theater, and some had their own theater, they would have a backdrop, they would have lights, they might have a microphone.
Just for a lecture.
They would set up a screen and a camera for close-ups just for my lecture. So they really make you feel special and appreciated.
Nothing like early in the U.S. where you just kind of stand in the corner. And
exactly. You're in the church basement and it's moldy. And
you're
on Magic Boy. Go ahead and do your stuff.
We're going to be got to get out of here by a certain time.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're much more appreciated. I mean, audiences in America are good as well, but it's just a little bit different, I guess.
Exactly.
Now, you had a little bit of time off. Obviously, you said 30 cities. So is there something that you saw or did or visited while you were on
Paris. I had 2 days off. I went to Paris. To see that city was just absolutely, absolutely beautiful. I was very, Gayton Bloom was lecturing. At Le Double Fond, and they invited me to come and see. So I got to see that, and I was in Marseille in France. Absolutely beautiful city. Munich in Germany. Cologne. I had a couple of days off in Cologne. Fabulous city. So, the memory is what will last a lifetime.
And I'm sure you had some friends who are magicians or mentalists who kind of showed you around. And
I
made sure you saw the local colors.
Exactly. So the people are very gracious over there, and treated me like one of the family.
Did you have some food that you particularly enjoy? Was there a dish that you had?
Everything. I try to always.
In Germany, I love Jägerschnitzel. It's just different.
Oh, the schnitzels over there are incredible. Yeah. I remember being in Cologne. We went out to a restaurant, and I said, "What's this on the menu?" And the guy said, "Oh, you don't want that." I said, "Why?" He said, "That's all local food." I said, "That's what I want."
Yeah.
So it was like an appetizer dish.
Funny.
With different local foods. One of them, uncooked hamburger.
Really?
With onions in it. And I ate it. It was delicious.
And you're still with us?
Yes. So far.
Yeah, that's right. Feeling pretty good. All right, well, good. How's the convention going? The combined convention here?
It's going well. I'm having fun seeing a lot of people that have come up. Oh, I have this trick or that trick. So a lot of people have been very kind to me over the years, and I appreciate it.
Sure. Great. And have you had a chance to see any of the FISM stage contests?
No, I haven't.
There's been some fantastic acts over there.
I have heard, but it's just between the jet lag, I'm just so tired. and working here.
You came straight from Europe to here.
Oh,
you've got to be like running on empty now.
On Monday morning, I was in the south of France. So, and now I'm here. And like I said, Sunday I go back. And I'm looking for, 2 days on the couch. Nothing to do.
You're looking forward to some me time,
yeah,
I guess,
exactly.
Eventually. So you're finished after this for a little while after this convention?
Exactly.
Okay. And last time, the dates for the Mindvention?
Mindvention will be October 12, 13, 14 in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And
Mindvention.net. Yeah, Palace Station.
There we go. Thank you very much. That was Danny Archer for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. The reason I thought I would come down to the dealer's room about this time, because there is a 3D kids show thing that's going on upstairs with the 3Ds. I think it's David Kay and Danny Orleans, and I've forgotten who the other one is. They're all good, yes. And so, but the dealer's room is a little bit quiet right now, so over in the Genie booth with, not Richard Kaufman, but with Jim Steinmeier. Hi, Jim.
How are you, Scott?
I'm doing excellent, thank you very much. So what is new with you? I mean, you are always working on new stuff. I mean, I don't know where to begin. So
it's a little bit of everything, and it just keeps going, and, you know,
book or something?
I'm working on a couple new things, and there's a new Impossibilities book that I did that came out last year, and I think there's going to be another one this year,
Okay. Actually.
So I'm kind of at work on those, and a couple other small books, and hopefully a biography maybe in the next year of a magician that I'm working on.
Anybody you can tell us yet?
Oh, I'm doing a biography of Charles Morrett, a full biography of Charles Morrett.
Charles Moore?
Morrett.
I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
And it's a great story. It's a really inside baseball story
for
magicians.
Any story you can share?
Well, I've written about him before,
yeah.
But I've been really fortunate to be in contact with his family since all of that. And he's an amazing guy, a kind of second-tier guy who never had it easy. And it's really interesting seeing what he did.
Yeah.
I mean, he really changed magic and changed all the magicians he worked with. And I think it's a kind of secret story that hasn't really been explained until.
And do some of his family, you said that you've talked with, know some of the secrets or some things perhaps that hadn't been shared before?
What they were unaware of was the technical part of his career,
Okay. Which
is really interesting. And he was a master at keeping secrets. I mean, really a master at keeping
secrets. He didn't really keep a lot of records, though.
He didn't keep records, and he wouldn't talk about what he was doing. So it was really interesting to go back and kind of reconstruct this. But it's a great story. It's a great story about kind of a guy who innovated his way back into magic at a certain point in his career. It's really inspiring in terms of kind of the creative output of this guy. And I hope I'm right. It's an interesting, like I say, an inside baseball story from magicians.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed, you know, The Vanishing Elephant, which you kind of would say...
He was part of that, yeah.
Yeah, that this was not something that was widely known, or, you know, that Houdini had kept it a secret, and so let's take a look at and examine. Yeah. Now, is this going to be something that's going to be available for the public then as well?
No. I'm going to do this. This book is just for magicians, because I've got there's too much technical stuff. As I've said, I have to kind of let my inner geek fly on some aspects of this book where I just kind of bear down in technical stuff.
Sure.
Because that's really what the story is. And those books for the public have to sort of be on a slightly different level.
I agree. That's why I was asking.
You just can't, like, stop the book and start talking about reflection principles.
But there's so much time, effort, you know, so many man hours, you know, that you're expending in order to put into this for so little to get back, as opposed to something that goes out to a wider public, you know. So this is really not a financial gain.
I know. But you know what? Some of those subjects, you just kind of get to the point where you say, I sort of have to do this one.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting story, so hopefully I'm partway through that, just starting it, and it's look forward to doing that one.
Yeah. Now, the last night's illusion, I was talking with Al Tremone yesterday morning, and he said, I know, and I spoke with Alex earlier this year when we were out in Tahoe, spent some time with him, and he was telling me about the close collaboration that he has with you and a lot of ideas, and that was a new illusion that they had presented last night.
Right.
How did you like seeing that for the first time?
Oh, it was great. It was great.
You want to explain for the people now that this is kind of over, then kind of describe this in words what they see.
It's a kind of levitation that happens around three speakers, I guess is the way to say it. Audio speakers, the analogy is that the sound is what's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of visualizing the sound each time. When the speaker's turned a certain way, it moves her a certain way.
Yeah.
When it's twisted over, it lifts her up in the air. And then, you know what? It's really great to see, because it was, I don't even know what percentage. You know, it was 25% an idea I had and talked to Alex about it, and then it was 75% kind of what he did with it.
Okay.
And so it was fantastic.
He's a great performer.
He's a great performer, and it's so smart and so visual, and it's really interesting, because it's everything you think of levitation isn't going to be, which is fast and kind of changing and sort of visual and dramatic and, like, not at all kind of lyrical. You know, in other words, it just kind of turns that on its ear.
Right.
And
it fits his style perfectly, because, you know, he's so high energy, you know, and young, and with the music and the hip. And,
It's all that things that if you looked at it on paper, you'd say, well, this won't work. And, of course, that's how you have to let someone do something like that. And, it was really fun to watch and see. And he's going to, I mean, that was the first time, literally the first time we did it for an audience.
Right.
So it's great. He's doing it on tour now. And
He said he's heading out Saturday. Yeah. I guess they're going to start on
so with he'll get a chance.
So I just wondered how, you know, you sitting in the audience and seeing one of your babies actually being born.
It's always fun. It's always, always, always fun.
Uh-huh.
And it's always fun to see what a really good performer does with something.
That's not something that everybody can do. It fits his style, as we said, you know, that there are certain things that are, like, customized.
I mean, I know, because I got to hear about it. about it, but you can't believe the amount of work that went into that on his part. I mean, it's just frightening how many details.
Yeah.
Because that thing is both it's lighting and sound and apparatus and all that stuff all together, and it all happens in 4 minutes.
Right.
So you just kind of push the button and then stand back, and the freight train rolls through, and you hope that no one's under the wheels at the end of it.
Right.
But that's what happens with that stuff.
So let me ask about some of your other projects, perhaps, that are kind of ancillary to magic, and that is Broadway and movies. You're doing anything on Broadway?
I'm not doing anything with movies, and I very rarely do. It's kind of bad if I get called into a movie. But I just did Aladdin on Broadway, which opened in the spring, and it's a big success. I can't take responsibility for that, but it's a huge success on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And won a Tony Award for the actor who does the genie, who's fantastic. And it's a really fun show, and audiences love it. So you know what? It was great to do. The effects are great.
What magic for people who haven't seen it or won't get it?
Well, there's things, the entrances and exits of the genie was something I did based on a really old illusion, and the disappearance of the villain Jafar is something that I did, but the thing that everybody talks about is the flying carpet.
Okay, yeah,
that's its own number, and that's a big hit. So you know what? That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was great to do.
I would think that Aladdin would lend itself to a lot of magical things happening.
Yeah, you know what? They were very careful about it. I wouldn't say that it's packed with magic. There are a few numbers that incorporate it,
mm-hmm.
but the carpet was great to do, and audiences love it.
Yeah.
And you know what? We worked with fantastic designers who just made it look amazing. Bob Crowley and Natasha Katz, scenic and lighting, and of course they just took part of an idea and just made it amazing.
Are there times whenever that you will have an idea, let's say that you're working on a play like that, and you'll say, okay, I think it's going to work, and then finally you just try and try and just scrap it and say, we got to start all over? Or do you kind of just keep tweaking it and trying to make something, or do you ever throw out the babies with the bathwater?
Well, hopefully, what they're buying when they work with me is they're hopefully buying the fact that they're not going to have to throw out something completely.
Yep.
But it does happen. It's so, in a magic show, you kind of go, well, this trick, we're going to make this trick work, because
sure,
that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
In a Broadway show, and it's a very painful lesson, everything is subservient to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And, they throw out songs.
Sure.
They throw out scenes.
Yeah.
They throw out characters. I mean, Aladdin changed completely between Toronto and New York. They completely rewrote three characters.
Wow.
And took them down from narrating the whole story down to being characters in the play.
The producers just didn't think it was working?
They just didn't think it was working.
Huh.
And you know what? They were the producers and the director, they were right. They were very smart, and they were brutal, and just kind of go, you know what? This isn't right. They took songs out. They completely rewrote songs.
Wow.
So it's a brutal process, and no, you can't go into it being precious about anything. And what I'm building up to is saying that there was magic cut out of Aladdin too. Nothing, not huge stuff, but production number stuff that the director just wasn't happy with. He thought it was slowing it down.
Yeah,
and you just can't be. Of course you walk away going, I can't believe that's months of work and it's gone. But you salute smartly, and you say, what do you want me to do next? General?
That's right. I'll march this direction.
And I'll march
I'm wearing
this
the uniform.
You bet. And you've bought into and you're wearing the uniform. And you have to trust that guy is looking at a bigger picture.
Yeah.
And, even though it's your picture that gets knocked on the head,
mm-hmm.
you have to trust that this is all about the bigger picture. And I would say, it was.
Yeah.
The guy who directed is a genius,
mm-hmm.
and he did a fantastic job, and that's what happens in those shows. So it's a little tight. It's not like dealing with a magic show, because you don't get to go in and go, but it's such a good trick!
Yeah.
And people say, yeah, well, who cares?
You were saying that there's no movie necessarily that you're working on that's in the works, but you were involved with Now You See Me.
No, I wasn't.
You weren't in that one. Okay, I know Jonathan.
No,
what?
I was involved in. I was involved
Bert
early
Wonderstone.
On with Wonderstone.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Levitt did it. Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah. I was involved in the early scripts part of it, and then Jonathan Levitt was involved in the onstage on camera training the actors part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You did a great job.
Okay. Yeah, I'd wonder. So you prefer really working with live theater than with movies?
Any hard copy ones?
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because?
Oh,
you get that immediate gratification?
Magic is supposed to be done live.
Of course. On YouTube.
Not on YouTube. And it's just always a compromise when it's on film. I mean, you know, ultimately they get to the point where they say, well, should we just be doing this? Should we just be faking this?
Yeah.
And you know, the thing about anything live on stage is that people are really sitting there and they're really feeling it. And,
right.
Oh, you know, that's what it's really all about. It's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, great. Thank you, Jim, very much.
Thanks, Scott.
I appreciate your time.
Great to see you.
You've done wonderful things for magicians, and we're looking forward to, I know, future ideas that we're going to be seeing, like whenever that Alex is going to have something else new, you know, coming up.
He will. He absolutely will.
He's such a young guy, and he's got such a great career.
I know. He's huge energy and really great ideas, so hopefully.
That's
look
great.
Forward to that.
Very good. Thank you very much. That was Jim Steinmeier for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Still in the dealer's room over here, and now I'm over with Gabe Fiore with Potter & Potter Auction. There, Gabe, how are you this morning?
Hey, Scott. Nice to see you.
It is still morning. Seems like it's early, 11 o'clock. Gosh, late night.
Yeah.
So I want to talk with you about your next auction. What's coming up, and who's... Whose stuff are you selling?
We're selling all kinds of Houdini-related memorabilia, August 23rd, and we've got some really remarkable stuff. We've got a scrapbook recently discovered that Houdini was keeping on spiritualism with his notes in the margins. We've got manuscripts of the unpublished Houdini manuscripts. We've got handcuffs. We've got a big thing that goes with the milk can that no one even knows exists anymore that's in the auction. We've got photographs. We've got family correspondence. We've got things he wrote to his brother when his mother was dying. We've got really a great assortment of stuff.
And is this from someone's collection who died? Or
it came from, I can't even remember how many different sources. It's just,
it's all
we get a
source.
Piece here, and we get a piece there, and we get 10 pieces here, and we get 20 there.
So you've been saving up for this?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, so this has been kind of a long-term thing you've been thinking about?
The last year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, there are a lot of huge Houdini collectors all over the world, you know. Have they been asking you about some of these things in the past?
Gotten,
you say, I'm going to hold back?
I've gotten a few phone. Can you send me a picture of... So what have you gotten in? You know, that kind of thing.
Sure. So, again, the date is what?
August 23rd, 2014 at 10 o'clock a.m. Central Standard Time, Chicago, Illinois.
And you don't have to be there.
You don't have to be there. You can bid online on the phone or send your bids in advance.
And if you want to go online to look at
PotterAuctions.com.
Okay. And the I think I saw somewhere that you're going to be having, I think this little card said, you're going to have a brochure or a booklet?
We'll have a catalog ready about a month before the auction.
Okay.
Yeah.
That people can buy.
Right.
Or you can look at the pictures
online, or just go look at a PDF or go on liveauctioneers.com where we use their services for internet bidding. Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, what kind of money are you expecting? I know like a lot of times at auctions you say, okay, well, we expect to have... You know, $100,000 or $1 million. You know,
I mean,
not on any particular thing, but overall, do you think the value of this?
I haven't run that number yet. I know that we have items in the auction that'll sell for $20,000 or $30,000, and we have items in the auction that'll sell for $100 and $200.
Yeah,
and there'll be other magic material in there as well.
Sure,
not just
Houdini,
but the vast. You know, I'd say at least half of it will be Houdini related. That's the focus.
Now, how many people usually are in your building physically during these auctions?
I've had 80 or 100. I've had two.
Okay, so it depends. This
it
one, since
depends.
Houdini, I would think.
Hopefully.
Hopefully,
you could just show up and view the stuff. I mean, it's not like you got to pay to get in.
Sure,
just to look at it. We set it all up like a museum.
Yep.
Track lights, all the posters on the wall, everything in display cases.
I don't know why when I've been to Chicago, I just haven't been by to see that. You know,
just give us a call. Yeah.
I'd love to do that.
So, if there's not an auction coming up, it looks like hell. But you know, when the week before,
stuff.
It looks great.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I remember talking with Eric DeCamps, I think, before when he was saying an auction and he was up there.
Yeah, we were selling Charlie Reynolds stuff, and Eric was doing his show in our gallery.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks, Gabe, very much.
No
and
problem.
So one last time for the URL.
PotterAuctions.com.
That's plural, auctions.com.
Right.
There you go. That's Gabe Fiore. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Scott.
Scotty out. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and today we are at the FISM Grand Championship Contest here today, and we have a big audience, and right now I have Bill Levins. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Scott. How are you today?
I'm just wonderful very much, and it's great to be here in front of all these people. There are a few people out there. Can you applaud? Perfect. Sounds much better. Thank you for moving us around. Okay, that's what a stage manager does, I guess. They manage what we're doing. So, I first of all wanted to find out. My question is if your wife knows that you've got her jewelry.
So it's on loan.
It's on loan.
It's on loan.
It's like
yes.
It's on you.
Yes.
So tell me something about this presidential lattice work you've got going on here.
I got up early this morning and broke into Sean's room and pried it off of his neck.
That's right. Because he was sleeping with it. Because he just got this officially yesterday. So you're really kind of the past international president. You're just kind of a pip. I guess.
Well, you know, I mean, there's nothing more past than a past international president. That's true.
I see. Well, yeah.
But, you know, that's the way it goes.
I think I see that we may have to pause this and continue this later. So.
Later.
Yeah. Where would you be without me?
Please welcome Ed Ripley and Shank Kathari.
Excuse me. Is now a bad time?
Is this on? Come on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I thought we might finish up a little bit. We kind of got interrupted by something behind us over here. So
I hate being interrupted.
Yeah, I thought that we would continue over this. So you were the president for this past year. Now you are a pip, as we said.
As of Saturday.
And so Sean Farquhar is the new incoming president for this coming year.
And he's going to be a great one, too, I tell you. Nobody's going to be able to do it like Sean.
It's going to be great. Wonderful. So I wanted to just ask you about what's been going on this past year. I mean, you've been traveling around the world and enjoying. What have been some highlights?
The highlights are meeting all the people. That's the best. I've seen a lot of magic, but I've met so many nice people. And there.
Which countries? Whereabouts did you travel?
I went to the foreign country called Las Vegas like four times.
Yeah, they got France, Paris, and over there and everything else.
Went to the British Ring Convention in Buxton.
Okay.
And that was a beautiful place. It was in they held it in the Opera House. Same architect that designed the Palladium in London. It was a gorgeous place. And so I walked out. They let me open the ceremonies. And so I've never been to England before.
Did you have your guitar?
I had it backstage. It was gone again.
Okay.
But I said, I walked out. I said, I know y'all are going to find a hard time to believe this, but I'm not from around here. Some say I have an accent. I don't know. But, in fact, I said, the closest thing to a place like this I've ever been is the Epcot Village at Disney World. There's this beautiful architecture and stuff like that. It was cool.
Did you visit like Germany, Italy, and a few other places then as well?
No, didn't get there. No.
China, over to Asian countries?
No, I went to Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Did you go to the bathroom? I mean, rural traveler all over the place. And so I think it'd be kind of fun. So that way you got to be fated wherever you went. People were you were the international president, so they paid you honor. And
oh, yeah, that was very nice. It's kind of like now.
That's right. Yeah. Just move us around over here. That's fine. The tarps are important over there. Yep. I want to be careful over there. Hey, Oscar, you're doing a great job, by the way, man. Yeah, you and Melvin. Okay. Disney? I got Vinnie Grasso helping over here then, too. Gosh, all the presidents, past presidents, and future.
That's what I have to look forward to, I think.
I guess so. You're going to be cleaning up after all this. Something
wonderful. What's it like to be an outgoing president? So what are you going to do? I said, I'm going out.
And so some of the other things that you've done, was there something that was particularly difficult? I mean, like waiting around the airport or some other things that have been maybe a bad experience?
Well,
if you had bad food or something?
I got to MC a show with all foreign names.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. It was quite the humorous event.
Yes. Well, I heard you backstage practicing some of the names of these.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's part of the job as being a master of ceremonies is, of course, being able to know their names without, reading something so this way that you have it all memorized.
That's right. That's right. And I called Rich Block, and he said, well, make sure you put a sheet on the stage in case you forget.
Right. Well, you got a big sheet behind you.
I know.
They take
with all the names on it.
Oh, that kind of sheet.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
And, of course, I didn't do that, and of course, I forgot.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so you're going to be we had Jack Brown as the International Brotherhood of Magicians going out, and so you're coming in then as the – is that right? Is the – are you going to be the attorney coming in, or who's going to be our counsel?
Well, I guess that will be me.
But you are coming in.
Yeah, I am coming in. See, okay. I'm going out and coming in.
Well, I think it's time for us to go out now. You want to announce the next act over here?
Ladies and gentlemen from China, please welcome Sheldon Wang.
Wow, that's major cleanup on aisle 7 here.
I have a short housekeeping announcement to make. Please be advised that Juliana Chen's youth event will now be held at 4 p.m. on Saturday in the Pershing Room. A youth event, 4 p.m. Saturday, Pershing Room.
Good. Don't forget that. Well, speaking of the convention and activities, I wanted to ask you, Bill, about some of the things that have been your favorite from this convention, the combined convention. This is our 10th combined convention, last one being in Louisville a few years ago. So what's been the...
Well, you know, Louisville was hard to top, and this one, I think, has done that job. I tell you, it's been a great event. Have you all had a good time? How about Richard Turner? Is he on another planet or what? Oh, my gosh. That's been a highlight. I'm a card guy. And
I was just talking with Sandy Marshall. He was saying that he's going to be producing him in a one-man show in Chicago.
I read about that, yeah.
It'll be coming up around the time they're going to be having the 50th anniversary convention coming up the 17th and 19th of July, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Richard's going to be doing something there. So a few tickets still are left available, I'm sure, for that show. But anyhow, that the other kinds of things at the convention, have you bought something in the dealer's room? You found something exciting there that
well,
you can't
I'll
live
tell
without?
You, the, absolutely. One of the highlights, Michael Skinner and I were really close, and Richard Kaufman has put together a DVD and a CD set of conversations that Mike used to mail everybody tapes and just go on and on about different stuff. And this all came from Alan Okawa's collection in Hawaii.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Makes wonderful little skin wallets and everything. Yeah,
it's just like Mike was in the room talking to you.
Yeah. Well, they were such close friends. I'm sure it was just a nice chat kind of thing.
Yeah. So I'd pick one of those up if I were you.
Yeah. And any other books or anything that you saw?
I'm after this event, I'm actually going to have time to go in there and look around some more. It's been pretty busy, pretty hectic, you know, with all the meetings and stuff that we've had to have. But I'm looking forward to. I got money burning a hole in my pocket.
Well, it looks like you might have a little bit of time right now because I think they're getting ready for the next act. Do you want
to announce? Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, from South Korea, Jay Yang. Well, welcome back, Scott.
Well, same to you there, Bill.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing so everybody will know?
Sure. Some of you perhaps subscribe or listen to the magicwordpodcast.com, and that is just a free podcast that's commercial free. That is something that I used to do something on the Magic Newswire with Dot Vickers some years ago, but the idea is that it's just an opportunity to kind of hear some of the magician's thoughts, just kind of sit down and chat with them. But in particular, when I'm attending a convention, I always like to spend some time talking with friends, with registrants, kind of finding out, getting a feel of the convention, and then going back to my room and then uploading all these things into the podcast. So each day that you can hear what happened. If you're here, you know what happened, but you might have missed some of these conversations, so you can listen to that. Or people who are not here feel as if that they are actually here because they're getting fresh information. You know, I'd also say, of course, that it's important to get as much information as you can from other sources to learn, you know, more about other magicians and how to be a better business man or woman, you know, in magic then as well. But anyhow, yeah, themagicwordpodcast.com is kind of the way to go. I was going to mention Craig Mitchell, by the way, also, because he's been given, I think, writing some great reports, and also has been on the Genie Forum to kind of keep up to date. And I like his candidness and his ability to write. I think he's very good. I'll tune into that then, too.
It's very interesting. I've enjoyed listening to those, you know, especially the ones you can't go to. It's
sure, you kind of feel like you're there. Hopefully, exactly. That's kind of the idea. It's not just an archive of historical archive of what happened, but also then to kind of feel as even if you were there to see what are the things you may have missed or whatever. But aside from that, then, you know, hearing other people who are lecturers who are traveling through. And so each week on Thursday evening, which, you know, Thursday, of course, is Magic and Martini night. So we down at the Grand Bar at 5 o'clock. So we're always like to try to post something that's happening. And so, again, that's available also through iTunes then as well. And so for those people who don't know necessarily what a podcast is, you might just think of it as a radio broadcast, basically, on the Internet or something that you can download and put on a flash drive or whatever, listen to in your car on your iPod or whatever else that you're listening to. But we're here right now, of course, for the FISM North American Championships. And I know we have some judges. Would you like
to? Yes, I do. I'd like to introduce the judges, but please hold your applause to the end. I'm not going to ask them to stand because they're very busy at doing what they do. But we've got Domenico Dante, the president of FISM, Jarrett Bregman, the vice president of FISM, Juliana Chen, who won first place at FISM, Joan Caesar from Canada, Brad Jacobs, who's the SAM ambassador, Bill Wells, who is the IBM co-chair of the convention, Yuji Yasuda, who's the professor of the South Korean School of Magic.
Let's give them a big round of applause for the work they do. Well, I think the next act is ready, Bill.
Sounds good. Please welcome from the United States, Christian and Catalina.
We're back.
And you know, one of the things that I've had some of the listeners who have written in, and I love to get emails and from everybody who tells me some suggestions, and one of the things was that they said, I'd love to see pictures of the people that you talk to on the podcast so I know what they look like. I may not know this particular person or another, and you being the past international president, I think it's important that people know what you look like. So I want to take a picture of you, and let me see. You know, I think it might be better if maybe... Can you back up just a little bit more that way? A little bit more that way. About 3 more feet back. No. No, I'll tell you, can I have the house lights? Because it's a little bit bright. If I can have the house lights up over here then too, perhaps. Perfect. There we come. Okay. There we go. Bill, let me see if I can get then you with the house lights. There we go. And if everybody can be applauding with him also, that even makes it better. Yeah, let's hold that pose. I like the selfie idea.
That one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to see up your nose. Look down. Look down. No, look at this. Okay. Perfect. Okay. That'll go over there then on the podcast for tomorrow then too. So, I was asking you then further about some of the things that you bought. You've enjoyed the convention. Have you had a chance to attend the lectures or anything? The late night, you said you like Richard Turner's show, of course.
Yeah, that was wonderful, wonderful. Time has been a bad factor for me. I got to see Gaia's lecture on coin magic. It was wonderful, but that's the only one. And there's just too many conflicts. But after, in about an hour, I'm going to be free
to go. Well, or relatively inexpensive, I guess.
That's right. Yeah.
So let's talk about then next year. We're going to be having then a lot of conventions. You know, Craig Mitchell again had pointed out, and I think that's certainly worth noting, and that is it looks like it could be a train wreck. I mean, look at all the conventions that are happening.
And some incredible ones as well.
They're all going to be good and all going to be having some really good lineups, not the least of which are going to be the Society of American Magicians and the IBM convention separately then next year.
Right.
And
I think we're in Jacksonville next year.
You know, we are. I think that should be a good convention. I'm looking forward to that one. And we've already got some talent lined up, and there's going to be then for the IBM, and we're going to start taking the registrations after breakfast, I believe, on Saturday morning after during the Merlin breakfast. The SAM has already started registering, so you can get your early registrations then right now for that. And, of course, then, let's see, we're going to be having, what are the dates for the SAM convention? Anybody? July 1 through 4, there we go. And then you quickly run to Rimini, Italy, for FISM. That's going to be the 5th through the 11th. I've already got my tickets for that. If some of you missed that, be listening to the daily podcast. I'll be updating that.
Another Magic
Italy.
Live next year.
Well, yep. And so I was going to say, once we get back, let's say on the 11th, then the IBM convention is going to be then the 15th through the 19th in Jacksonville. And then after that, we've got a couple weeks, and then we're going to be having then Magic Live, Stan Allen's wonderful convention in Las Vegas. Then we get a few months at least until November, I believe, when Richard Kaufman's going to be having the Genie. What is it again? What's the date?
October, I think.
Yeah, October. Did somebody say the TAOM? Of course, I don't want to forget that. In Houston.
That's a great convention. That was one of the highlights of the year for me, was going down to Dallas at the TAOM.
Dallas was a really good convention.
It was.
You know, this year. Yeah, Mark Jensen was the president this last year and did just a great job.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we always have a pretty good turn. Oh, I heard just like Zen applause, one hand clapping there just a moment now for that. It was But it was just I thought a very good convention, and the TAOM always has a good turnout. We often will have as many people there or more than they have for one of the national conventions.
Absolutely.
Certainly. Next year, by the way, it's going to be in Austin, Texas. This year it's going to be in Fort Worth.
Correct.
Next year it's going to be in Austin, Texas. Those of you who know Trixie Bond, if you may have attended then the 3D Kids lecture then this morning, you know, Trixie, of course, is a magician, a children's magician. She's going to be featuring women in magic. That's going to be the big thing for next year. It's going to be a little bit different in Austin. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
It'll be an exciting year. Hope to see all of y'all everywhere.
Well, I think it's about time to introduce our next act. What do you think?
Sounds like a great idea, Scott. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from Japan, Den Den. There they are, making up again.
That's right. Well, you know, I want to talk about the future of magic a little bit, about since one of the goals, of course, of the magic organization is to inspire youth and everything. And so what are we doing within the IBM and the SAM this year?
I think the most important event of the entire convention and one of the greatest events was something that most of us were not even invited to.
Yeah.
And that's the Lance Burton Teen Seminar. Excellent. Yeah. Jeff McBride, Eugene Berger, Dr. Larry Haas, Bryce Kuhlman, and a host of other volunteers.
And Lance
Burton, of course, Sean.
Alex Ramon and some others.
It's just an incredibly important event.
And it was a two-day event. Now, this year, I understand that they lowered the age to 7-year-olds as well, and they split them into two categories, right. 7 to 12 and then 13 to 19.
Right, exactly. It was a big success, and it's very important, I think, to get our youth involved in magic because I'm getting old.
And the IBM has kind of picked up the gauntlet, I guess, after the Desert Magic Seminar, in which they've had the Lance Burton youth events each year. And after the seminar ceased, then last year in Phoenix, I believe, is whenever that Lance started picking this up with Jeff and Larry. And
absolutely. And a big hand should go out to Bill and Becky Wells, I tell you.
Absolutely.
Wonderful job.
Boy. Very instrumental in making that all come together like that. Well, I think that really is important, you know, that the future of magic really lies in the hands of our youth, you know.
And Jeff makes an important point. He says, look around the room because these will be your friends for the rest of your life.
You know, that has to do with contests also. I remember he was talking about that. It's important to enter contests like this, for an example, because you get to meet other friends who are competing against you and that you develop lifelong in-the-trenches type of friends. I mean, it's hard to explain unless you're a soldier or have actually been in that situation that's going to be very difficult. But once you've done that, they can relate to what you have gone through, basically. And so you kind of served in grade or in time. And so you have a bond that is unlike some other kinds. So I think it's important that you encourage your children and yourself even to compete on a local level up to the regional, the national.
Absolutely. And the great thing about the youth event is it teaches you the correct way from the beginning so you don't have to learn all the wrong ways of not only doing magic but of being a good person as well.
Well, that's a good thing about actually having a mentor perhaps, you know, in your local ring or assembly. If you have someone who is going to be a mentor, do you have a mentorship or anything like that within your club, or do you have a young magician's club within your ring?
Unfortunately, our ring is inactive at the present time. It was the Ben Stone ring, actually.
Oh, sure.
In Springfield, Missouri.
Boy, Ben made some wonderful stuff.
Oh, he did. He did.
Delvin.
Yes. I've got a little bit of everything, I think.
Yeah, one of his Delvin dominoes.
In fact, Ben gave me Bobo's Delvin domino that Bobo used in all of his trade shows. And when Bobo passed on, it was given to Ben, and Ben passed it on to me.
Yeah, those who are listening to the podcast who may not know what a Delvin domino is, basically it is the...
What's next
type of effect, but basically that at the end, it's a metal thing, and at the end you actually have a hole in this metal thing, so you stick your whole thumb through the hole in the...
It's a great ending. I used it a lot. I used to teach seminars for attorneys, and I used it to always find the loophole.
That's clever.
Indeed.
So, yeah, something sounds like something that Joey the Sea would do.
That's right.
Joey's really great. I think I saw Joey Cercillo here at the convention. Another guy from Philly, great magician and an attorney. And so, do you find that there are a lot of attorneys who gravitate towards this because they like the lying aspect? I mean, because they like. No, what is it about this? It seems like we have so many attorneys who are magicians.
Oh, I think it's a form of stress relief, actually. I remember when I was in law school, I had gotten out of magic for a long time.
Yeah.
And kind of got into the music thing. And when you're in law school, you know, you read hundreds and hundreds of pages, you know, every night, and you need a break. And I was walking through the bookstore, and there was Bill Tarr's Now You See It, Now You Don't on the bookshelf. I said, man, I haven't done that in a long time. So I picked up that book, and many thousands of dollars later, I'm still buying books. But yeah.
That's, you know, Roger Clouse always told me your best investment is in books.
It is. You it know, is.
I think a lot of people, of course, are, which is great, I think, to watch you read the PDFs and have them on your iPad, your tablet, or whatever, you know, it's going to be like that. But I agree with you. It is a stress reliever. I used to trade financial futures, and it was very stressful. You can imagine the millions of dollars exchange hands every day. And so by the end of the evening, it was kind of nice to kind of relax and shuffle cards and practice and everything.
Absolutely.
So take your mind off completely.
You could study for 2 or 3 hours and then take 15 or 20 minutes and work on a card trick, and it just made the next 2 or 3 hours go by.
Fly by. You know, so much better than watching television or something. Let your mind kind of go numb. You know, but I think it's important also not just to learn the trick, but also to add entertainment to it. You know, otherwise, like Mike Lamard said, it's bubblegum for the eyes. It's just something that's kind of fun to see, but not necessarily entertaining. So you need to have a good character. Do you find whenever you're performing that you have a different character, or you have the same persona?
No, I'm not good enough to have a different character. You see what you get.
It is what it is. Okay. Well, speaking of seeing what we get, I think it's about time to see what we get next.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Switzerland, Natalie and Ellie.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You've got a great audience. And please give a big hand to my friend Scott Wells.
Thank you. I don't like to close my podcast without asking, of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So, Bill, what is your magic word? What's important to you?
I think that would be respect, I think.
Respect.
I think we all stand on the shoulders of the giants, and we need to respect where we came from, and we need to respect those that we perform for.
Exactly right. That's a good way of closing out. And so thank you guys very much.
Appreciate it.
I have to say, Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm back in the dealer's room. The FISM North American Championship contest are now over, and so I'm back over here. Just everyone seems to have swarmed the dealer's room, and I'm here at the Patrick Page booth, and I don't think that I've seen actually a booth that Patrick Page has had before. You got not just a single, but it's like a double booth here then, too. This is, I've got with me Philip Pound, and so, Philip, hello.
Hi there, I'm the son-in-law of Patrick Page. We set up Patrick Page Magic as a tribute to Patrick, and to sell his book, Magic Page by Page, which he finished a week before he sadly died in February 2010. We were kindly invited to come over to America to this convention, and we took the opportunity. We've come over here as a family, my wife, Jeanette Page, his daughter, my brother-in-law, Jeremy Page, and his wife Eileen. The four of us came over. We've got a big double stand.
Yeah.
Obviously, with four of us, there was no way we were ever going to make enough money to cover the cost of coming over here.
Yeah.
So this is very much a labor of love. We've come over here to make people aware of the fact that we exist, that Patrick wrote this wonderful book which celebrates 50 years of him working as a magician. It includes all of the tricks that he invented, and all the routines and all his tips on how to perform magic. And basically, America is our second largest market.
Yep.
We operate online, but of course most people don't even realize we exist, so we seize the opportunity to come over here, and so people can see the book. Lots of people we've had some wonderful reviews. We're now on the second edition. We sold 1,000 hardback editions of the book. We sold out. We only sell direct. We don't sell through any dealers. This is deliberate so that we get control of the quality and control of the price.
Mm-hmm.
The price is very reasonable at $65 is what we're selling.
It's a great deal because you have gone to the paperback. I've got the, I'm fortunate when I was over there last year, as we were just talking, I've got a hardback copy, which costs a lot more, but it's beautifully bound and everything, but it's a lot more expensive to have to ship, and so paper is a lot easier.
Well, here's the irony. It actually costs us more to produce the softback edition than
really?
It did the hardback.
I would not have guessed that.
But obviously what we couldn't do is produce a softback edition that was more expensive than the hardback edition. So we lowered the cost and we reduced our margin. But the reason, the main reason why we went to softback is we got lots of complaints from Americans who, because it cost so much to ship it.
Sure, of course.
It was costing us a lot of money. In actual fact, we subsidized the cost of shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of people complained that the book in sterling terms was £75,
right,
including shipping. And
that's
the book
right.
itself was actually £45. So £30, which is equates to about $52.
Yeah.
People thought that was a lot of money to ship a book relative to the cost of the book. But we didn't get one single complaint. In fact, we got a lot of praise when people actually got the book and saw that the cost of the shipping was actually what we paid.
Yeah.
And they saw the quality.
They're not adding anything to it, of course. I wanted to ask you, being the son-in-law of Patrick Page, you know, what it was like. I mean, I had worked with Patrick up in Sterling one time, and of course he came to Fechter's every year, and we were friends, but, you know, living with him or having him as an in-law, you know, coming for, you know, Christmas holiday or whatever.
Well, he was a wonderful man. I mean, I met him lots and lots of times. I probably spent 4 or 5 times a week with him.
Yeah.
We were very, very close. My son is his only grandson, and he was very, very much a family person. He always spent time.
That's why I always wonder about his personal side. I mean, I know him as a professional and as a magician, but I just wondered what his likes and dislikes.
Well, he was a wonderful man. He was a very modest individual. He would never tell you about what he did. He always hid what he did.
Hmm.
One of the first occasions he ever performed for the family was my 40th birthday. I'm now 56, but it was a long time ago. He never, ever performed magic.
Oh, he didn't?
Never. My wife, Jeanette, begged him and said, you know, would you as a special favor do a performance at Philip's birthday? And that was one of the few occasions. He always said that when he got home, he was a family man.
Wasn't at work.
No, absolutely. And I know Jeanette on many occasions has spoken to sons and daughters of other magicians, and they've said, you know what it's like. Being, you know, the daughter of a famous magician, you know what it's like. It's always the magic first. Well, she said, no, I don't, because actually with him, the magic was always last.
Even as she was growing up as a child, I would think, you know, he'd do her birthday party or something.
No, absolutely not.
Interesting.
But he would always arrange to be at, school events. He would always find the time. He was an extremely busy man. He used to work at Davenport's in London
right.
during the day, and then he may do 2 or 3 shows in the evening. He was always very busy, but he always found the time. And probably the best story I can think about, Patrick was offered the job as magic consultant for Harry Potter 3.
Oh.
And he turned it down, and I can remember talking to him, and I said, why you turned it down? You know, that's a big thing. And then I said, you'll be really famous. And he said, so? And I said, but why aren't you doing it? He said, you don't understand the world of film. At the time, his wife, Margaret, was not particularly well. And he said, look, when you go and do film, they make you work until 4, 5, 6, whatever it is in the morning, until it's taken. He said, I don't want to do that. I want to be with my wife.
The family first, as you said.
It was always the family first. And one of the reasons why he wasn't so famous is because he was offered jobs which would have meant working by the seaside and would have meant summer seasons away from the family.
Right.
And he always turned them down because he always put his family first.
Well, speaking of family, Jeanette is here then right now.
Hello.
Jeanette Page, hello. Scott Wells from the Magic Word Podcast, and just recording a podcast over here. So what was it like growing up with a famous father, I guess? You know, I say famous, you know, among the magicians. And he was popular, of course, in the UK as well, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was a very popular magician in the UK. He came to London from Scotland in his early 20s, and he only got into magic when he basically came to London.
Mm-hmm.
But he became.
What did he do in his earlier years?
Oh, he worked in factories. Hmm. Worked in a plastics factory.
In Scotland?
In Scotland. Yeah. Came to London, worked in a plastics factory, joined a magic club, but became very good at magic very quickly.
Yeah.
Within a couple of years, he was teaching, working, you know, doing really well. So he was able to give up the plastics factory, and he got a job working in Oxford Street in a magic shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked alongside Ali Bongo. A man called Dick Chevelle owned the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also Tony Carinda, Alan Allen, and they all worked together demonstrating in the magic shop.
Yeah, and Davenport's? Is that
no, it was Dick Chevelle's shop.
Oh, Dick's shop, okay.
Yep, before Davenport's. Mm-hmm. And Dad said it was the best fun ever because they all learnt from one another and they were all demonstrating their socks off, trying to outdo one another to sell tricks. And Dad said that's where he learned to work quickly, demonstrate tricks, which he just loved to do.
Yeah.
And then he moved on to Davenport's after that in 63. And became quite well known because Davenport's was a much bigger
shop. But what did he love to do? I mean, what kind of performance did he really like most? I mean, we have corporate performers over here and cruise ship guys. I know he's done a little bit of everything, but what
He did a little bit of everything. He started off working, he worked in pubs. They were really hard jobs.
Yep, working men's clubs, right?
Working men's clubs, all those things. And he said, but you learn how to deal with an audience very quickly. But I think he liked to work on stage. Sort of later on, he liked to do a stage performance.
Yeah.
And the bigger the stage, the better, he said, because that, you know, it's a good feeling when you're on a stage.
And he ultimately worked for the Queen, I think, didn't he? Do a command performance, yeah.
Sure. He's worked for the Queen. Not the Royal performance. He never did that.
Okay.
But for the Paul McCartney, he would entertain at Paul McCartney's house. He'd worked for lots of the celebrities.
Yeah.
But he never told anybody. He was always very modest.
Yeah.
My mum would say, you never guess where your father's working. So-and-so's house or, you know, George Michael or whatever.
Yeah.
He never bothered.
Never talked about it. It was just a job.
It was just work.
Yeah.
And I would say to him, if I found out, how did you get on? And he'd say, it was fine. I got paid. So
that's what's important. Bring home the money. Yeah.
He was a working magician. He was a, you know, he considered it a job. But said he was very lucky to be able to do a job that he loved doing.
Yeah.
Most people don't do that.
That's true, and he was very good at what he did, obviously, then, too, as well. Any favorite stories you have or you have shared with others that about growing up with him or something that comes along?
Well, I mean, he was just a great dad. He was a great dad, but I got to meet lots of famous magicians. But I got a bit bored with magic because we saw so much of it.
Yeah.
He would say to me, do you want to come to this show or do you want to come to that show? And I'd say, is there anybody good? And he'd say, well, there's this guy called Albert Goshman. I think you might quite like him.
Yeah.
So I got to see Albert Goshman.
Did you have several magicians who came and stayed at your home then?
Sure. We used to have people stay quite a lot. A very young Ricky Jay always stayed with us.
Mm-hmm.
Who else stayed?
Percy Diaconis,
the two of them used to come together.
Yeah.
And my mum and dad would go on holiday, and they used to look after Jeremy, my little brother. They used to babysit for Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. Morris Fogel.
Yeah, Morris Fogel was one of my dad's very, very close friends. We called him Uncle Morris. You know Morris Fogel, the amazing Fogel?
Right.
He did the
Russian roulette routine, which was famous for him.
Yep, he did, and the bullet catch.
Yep.
All those things, and I got to meet lots of them, but in a way you take it for granted they were just your dad's friends. And it's only later now when I look back and think, well, I met Sly Deeney, I saw what he did. But you become quite fussy about magic because you've seen all the greats. I used to say to Dad, you know, I'm only going with you if there's somebody good. And he'd say, okay, that's fine, this, you know, you'll like this guy, you'll appreciate it.
Yeah.
So, but when my father passed away, we started this business, and I wished I'd listened more.
Don't we all? You know, once your parent is gone, it's kind of like, I wish I would have listened or I would have learned about how to change tires or paint or whatever that your dad did.
I'd ask more questions.
Sure.
But we just took it all for granted, really.
Sure.
But we had a very happy life, so I had no regrets.
That sounds great. Well, Jeanette, thanks very much.
You're very
welcome. Phil, thank you very much as well. You were the photographer for the book, is that
right?
Well,
I took a lot of the photographs. I basically helped him. What happened, I don't know whether you know the story about the Big Book of Magic. Patrick produced the Big Book of Magic in 1976, and he was commissioned to write it. And I learned that very shortly afterwards, it was serialized in the Daily Mirror newspaper in England. And there were big stands in W.H. Smith & Sons, which is the largest chain of news agents in the UK, talking about how to cut a woman in half and giving away the secrets. And basically, the Magic Circle asked Patrick about this, and he explained the circumstances that he'd been commissioned to write the book. He had no idea that the book was going to be used the way it was.
Released that way. Yeah.
And they accepted his argument. Unfortunately, the International Brotherhood of Magicians they expelled him from the...
For exposing secrets.
For exposing secrets. And Patrick wasn't really bothered, to be honest. It wasn't a great concern to him. But his wife, Margaret, was absolutely indignant and incandescent with rage that they treated him so badly. Anyway, cut a very long story short, a couple of years later, Ali Bongo begged him to come back to the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and he accepted gracefully, and it was put in the past. But when I spoke to him about that, he said, don't worry about it, he said, and I found out that the book was translated into 5 different languages and sold hundreds of thousands of copies, and he made virtually no money from it. And I spoke to him about it, and he said, look, I'm going to write a much bigger, a much better book, and this one, I'm going to self-publish it, I'm going to control it, and none of those things are going to happen.
Right.
And this is going to be my legacy to the world of magic.
And this is it.
And he started writing it, but unfortunately he started to get ill. We found out he had terminal cancer. And then I was cajoling him. I was taking photographs to help with the book. And every time I took the photographs, I literally thought it was the last time that he was going to ever have his photograph taken. I thought he was going to die. And gradually, he managed to survive a lot longer than we'd anticipated. And I'm very, very glad to say that, he finished the book. And a week later, sadly, he died.
Yeah.
And we set up Patrick Page Magic to promote that book. And we sell that book, and we now maintain the quality. Okay. And that's why Patrick Page Magic exists.
And the website where people can get that is patrickpagemagic.com?
No, patrickpagemagic.co.uk.
.co.uk. Got it. Very good. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate you talking on the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty L. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com, and we're out of the dealer's room. We've found a little quiet corner to talk with my longtime friend and yours as well, Mr. Silly Billy David Kay. Hey, David.
Hello, Scott.
Always love spending
great
a little
to
bit
see
of
you
time.
Again.
And you as well. And you gave a lecture this morning then with it was a 3D convention or lecture.
That's right.
So let me see if I can get this straight. It was David Kay, Danny Orleans, and was it Dale Shell? David Shell? What's his name?
Doug Shear.
Doug Shear. Okay.
Doug Shear is one of the great secrets in magic. Doug is a school show guy from Detroit, and he's hands down the best school show guy I've ever seen.
Really? I mean, like assembly type shows?
Yeah. He has.
What makes him so good?
He has 13 different shows, and each show.
With a theme.
With a theme, right. Each show has its own. Right.
Sort of thing.
It has its own backdrops. Costumes, his character changes, his costume changes, the script, of course, the tricks. And the other thing he does is he does illusions in school, at a school show. Mm-hmm. He's got a truck, he drives the truck, they do illusions, two-person illusions. And this is a very unusual thing for a school show assembly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very good at putting a mess, at using magic to teach a message or to teach a lesson. This is his specialty.
So the whole, was it a 45-minute show or how long? Is it
today?
No, the school shows. How long?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
You ever worked
45
school shows?
Or an hour. I don't do school shows. No, I have done shows in schools.
Sure, but not.
But they're just silly,
kind of
funny
sure.
shows.
Yeah,
like graduation.
So everything he has really kind of focuses. I mean, I'm thinking of Steve Trash, for an example. I know his stuff is always reused,
but
recycled.
Right. Yeah. Imagine Steve Trash, but 13 times over. Different character, different costumes, different tricks, different backdrops.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah, he's really good.
So he can rotate that, and he can do that for life.
He
you
can
know,
do
because
it for
all
life.
The kids are going to be growing up, and he's got new
that's
kids
right.
to come
start over again.
And,
right.
Wow. And so does he work in a particular region?
Michigan.
Okay.
And whatever. And he works actually all the way to the East Coast as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. You've known him for a long number of years?
I've known him for many years. Mm-hmm. He was, actually, it's a nice story. I was with Warren Stevens.
Yeah.
He lives in Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
This was towards the end. I got to spend a week with him. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned Doug to me. I had never heard of Doug before. We met. Guy's a genius, and he was in my column in Magic Magazine, which I wrote for 8 years, and Doug was in there the most number of times, 4 times, mm-hmm. 4 different routines. So, and he's great. He spent a lot of years on the auto show circuit, where he learned how to incorporate a message using the magic, and he applies what he learned in the car shows to the kid shows.
So it's interesting that he went that
but
way.
But Scott, well, it's me we're talking about. Why are we spending all this? I'm silly Billy, else. For God's sake.
We like to talk about other people.
Go ahead.
We're going to dish.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's interesting that someone would go actually from corporate to children.
Yes.
When it's usually, it seems, because the money's more where the money, the company's.
He did it when his kids were born. Mm-hmm. He wants to be home on the weekends, and he is, and he's home most nights.
So he's chosen to go this route. So
yes.
He spend more time as opposed to being on the road with trade shows.
That's right. That's
for
exactly
so many
right.
nights a week.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't be
5 days
cruise
a week
or anything.
Right.
Like that either.
Just 5 days a week and gets home.
But he can relate to kids and everything.
He's great.
Well. Okay.
He's great.
Interesting. So what
and it was a big surprise. A lot of people know me.
Yeah.
A lot of people now know Danny thanks to his recent DVDs, and now that's why I chose Doug because. I knew people would be really impressed in the
I see Danny Orleans is another one. I always think of as a corporate guy, but you know, rather than a children's entertainer.
Yeah, well, Danny, it's actually kind of the other way around. He started as a kid show guy, did a lot of theaters, performing arts centers back in the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Then he evolved into trade shows, which he does a lot and still does.
Right.
But he wanted to put his, he wanted to, what would you say about that? Chronicle. His kid show career and his kid show material.
Yeah.
So he released these DVDs, and some people know him as a trade show, some people know him now as a kid show guy.
Yeah.
But he's both.
He's working both ends and doing it very successfully.
Yep.
And you're still staying in New York? You've been spending much time traveling?
I live in New York, and I love New York. I do shows in New York.
Mm-hmm.
For the last few years, I've been doing a lot of international conventions, which I love to do. I love performing at conventions.
For magic conventions.
Yeah, magic conventions.
Okay, yeah.
I love speaking at magic conventions. Last few years, I did a lot of international, and I'm actually, the next year, I'll be doing a lot of U.S. conventions, because I'm going to have a book coming out soon, so I want to sort of get my feet back into the American.
Okay.
Well, the book is going to be a compilation of my columns from Magic
Magazine. Magazine, yeah.
Right. I wrote 100 columns in Magic Magazine for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is going to be a compilation of all the columns, which means it's a compilation of 150 routines, 150 kid show routines.
A lot of those, of course, they weren't all yours, but they were ideas.
No, they weren't mine. They weren't mine. That was the beauty of it. It's going to be, there's about 120 different magicians contributed routines to the
mm-hmm.
column from 15 countries.
Wow.
So this is going to be a very nice book, tons and tons of material using standard kid show props. That was important to me. I didn't want people to get routines that use props that nobody owned. So it's mostly standard stuff, but with really original, wonderful
breakaway
routines.
Fan and all kinds of whatever
things.
Yeah,
usual
things.
Yeah. There's some dove pans, there's some square circles, there's stratospheres, there's all kinds of
different routines for them.
Really, and I deliberately asked people for their best material that they would be willing to share.
Of course.
And that's what the book is going to be. So that'll be hopefully by November.
So it'll be a good Christmas gift.
It's going to make a lovely Christmas gift. It's a wonderful
Or for Hanukkah.
Or a Hanukkah gift. Thank you. It's a wonderful suggestion.
Yeah.
But I'll be at Daytona in November, and I'm aiming to have the book ready for you then. Yeah.
Awesome. And so you will be traveling to conventions, you said, this next year or throughout the rest of this year? You got some more conventions?
No, for the next 12 months or so, I'll be U.S. conventions.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have asked me, and I'm sure you as well, about what's been happening with Dodd Vickers, you know, and have you talked with Dodd recently?
I love Dodd. Dodd is a great guy. We had so much fun on the Magic Newswire.
Yes.
And Dodd has, like, one of the great jobs of all time. Do your listeners know what Dodd does?
No.
Dodd is a location scout for films. Georgia is enticing a lot of Hollywood through tax breaks to shoot movies in Atlanta, or Georgia. And Dodd is like the location guy, and he hangs out with all the stars. I don't know what they're shooting now, but he talked about Grown Ups 2 was shot in Atlanta. He hung out with Adam Sandler, hung out with Jennifer Aniston in the Paul Rudd Jennifer Aniston film.
Yeah.
And he just hangs out with these stars, and he looks for locations, and he's got a really, really sweet gig, and he's very busy doing it.
And that's
so
the thing.
It takes a lot of time to do the podcast, as you know.
Yeah.
You gotta record, you gotta edit, you gotta maintain the site. And
He said that he's working like 60, 70 hours a week, and it's just got to be mind-boggling.
But once again, Scott, let's talk about me. Yes, Dot is doing really well.
So what is your middle
name? No. Dot is doing great, and he's actually working on cataloging the old Magic Newswires and having that accessible as an archive.
That's right.
Which is a great...
For the Conjuring Art Society.
Yeah. So it's
going to be... Bill Kalish is putting that together.
That's right. It's going to be a great resource.
Remember, we were talking about this on the podcast here just around Christmas time, I think.
Yes.
You know, and that was when Cameron was saying, they're going to be recording stuff that I said too. So.
That's right. It's amazing. You know, we have to remember that, you know, we, you and me and everyone that you interview, we are the... You know, the Ed Marlowe's and the Di Vernon's and the Charlie Miller's. You know, back in the 50s, Ed Marlowe and Charlie Miller hanging out was like kind of normal, but we don't have that now. And so we have to, you know, go back to whatever kind of research and archive there is of that kind of history. But we're making history. You're making history. Yeah. And people in 10 years, 20 years are going to be able to hear all this stuff and... You know, some of these magicians will become more famous, some of them will become less famous, but it's part of the magic history.
Fabric.
Yeah,
I agree, and that's why I like to have a cross-section of just everybody and different backgrounds, different interests and everything, and whether that they're well-known or not well-known,
that's
or
right.
someone's new to magic, you know, whether they're children or someone who are ill. I like to, you know, keep people up to date on others, you know, who are convalescing.
Could you imagine having interviewed, let's say, Fantasio, the day after he did his first Ed Sullivan show.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, stuff like that. But that's sort of what's happening now in magic history. So
right.
It's wonderful to have a record of all that.
Yeah, and that's something that Dot has done a great job. You know, and go back in those archives, get hundreds of podcasts. And that's why one of the things he's saying now, too, is that, you know, when we were doing these things every week, and he was saying, you know, let's cut it back to every couple of weeks or so because people are just not catching up with it. I mean, I'm still getting just as many downloads with us doing fewer episodes than we were. And so eventually he just said so people asked me, in fact just an hour ago someone asked, well, what's up with Don? So I just wanted to kind of get that for the record.
He had a great product, and
we
all want him to bring it back, but like I said, he's very happy, making a lot of money, and that's, you know, that's part of life,
his family life and keeping everything together. So it's always good to chat with you and kind of keep catch
thank
up.
You,
you
thank
know,
you
it's good. I just talked with David Oliver yesterday then too, another you know, good buddy that
I always enjoy,
you know, hanging out with him, and I'm glad he's doing so much better.
It's amazing.
And it's
literally a miracle.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And last night was so beautiful. Did you talk to him about that, or did you talk to him before that?
We talked before that.
Okay.
So now we can talk about it.
He came out on stage, didn't say a word, and that people stood up. 1,500 people in the theater stood up and gave him a standing ovation. Just for walking out on stage, which he deserves.
Yeah.
He's been through hell.
Yeah.
And he's, thank goodness he's still with us.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
great.
Right.
Yeah.
We just pray that Joni's going to do better.
Same
so now
thing.
We've been talking about her ill health, and she's back home in my home, you know, in Houston. And in fact, as we're talking, I just had received a text from her a couple days ago saying that she had apparently an infection that put her into the hospital. She's been staying with Daniel Summers at his home while awaiting a phone call to say, you know, we got the lungs and liver. Because it's got to be from the same person,
Oh, it has to be from the same,
person. So, the body won't reject that, of course.
Yeah.
And so it is very difficult. It's got to fit for her body, you know, and everything.
Oh.
So it's very tough, as you can imagine. But she is on that waiting list. And but she, again, had some sort of infection that, you know, threw her back in the hospital. And so... not a great outlook right now, so she can use all kinds of support. They're raising money, you know, for her then now, so I know that you know, emails and prayers and thoughts and
it's David Oliver. David Oliver is doing a wonderful thing with his current appearances, which is he's really promoting the idea of organ donation.
Yes.
So I'll say the same thing. Everybody needs to be an organ donor. You're not going to need them when you're dead.
Right.
And, you know, you can give someone life, someone like David Oliver and Joni Spina and people who we love and people who are loved. And it's
think
really
of all the good
that
these
thing.
People, the repercussions that he has. I mean, by being able to have more years in his life.
Thousands of people will be entertained by David.
Well, not just entertained. I'm thinking of the youth, you know, about how involved David is, you know, teaching other kids.
That's right.
And that they will grow up saying, here's my mentor. Here's the guy, you know, for every day that David's alive, you know, he has more people that whose lives he's changing.
Yes.
You know.
That's right.
As do you and I. You know, I think that that's important. We keep healthy then, too.
Yeah, well, and, we're doing what we can.
That's right. We do. Well, David, thank you very much.
Hey,
I appreciate
great
it
to see you again.
Okay, that's great. I was David Kay, Silly Billy, for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out.
All right, Scott Wells from the Magic Word Podcast.com, and I'm here with Rick Heath, who was with Le Grand David Show. And Rick, good to see you. How
good
are you?
Good to see you. Yeah, this is a nice surprise.
Yeah, and we were talking about the Cabot Theater is up for sale then, right?
Yeah.
Now. And so it's been up for sale for, what, several months, I think?
Since May of last year, actually.
Any interest? Or?
A lot of interest. Everybody who has taken a look at the theater wants to keep it as a theater. No talk of making a parking lot or condos.
That's good.
And I was telling Scott that while we still had the theater, it seemed like a wise idea to have an auction. In February of this past year, we had a big auction of a lot of our stage props, illusions, curtains, memorabilia, and it was really nice because everything found good homes.
That's good.
Collectors, people from, you know, the town who are patrons of the theater, who wanted a piece of the history of the theater. There was something for everybody. And,
In Beverly. Yeah.
In Beverly. And, for those who may not know, it's in Beverly, Massachusetts. For 35-plus years, it was the home of Le Grand David and his own spectacular.
And you have
company.
Been the artist who have done all the beautiful posters. Oh, my goodness.
Posters.
You are such a wonderful
programs,
artist. Yeah. So what are you doing now? Are you doing
it? Actually, I've begun my own. I am the business. It's called Magician with a Paintbrush.
Okay.
And privately building and painting and restoring illusions, props, etc., for magic collectors mainly.
So for doing posters and things, you do
posters.
What's your website?
MagicianWithAPaintbrush.com.
Okay, easy to remember.
Yeah, and I've been holding off on accepting anything private because I'm gearing up for the Yankee Gathering, the New England Magic Collectors, where I'm going to have a booth and have my stuff on display. And, if magicians and collectors like it, terrific. If not, I've got some nice stuff to look at all winter.
Exactly.
But I enjoy doing it, and those of us who are still in the company, we're still friends taking care of the theaters. But we've each kind of branched off in, doing our own independent thing, but, still sticking together as a group, so...
That's great, because you're all in the same community and good friends and all. So.
Good friends, been good friends for 40 years, and it's going to stay that way.
Well, they're getting ready for the show over here.
The show's going to begin.
That's right, I've got to grab my wife. Yep, that's right over there. Thank you very much, Rick. What is your magic word, by the way? It's called the Magic Word Podcast. What is your philosophy of life? What do you live by? What's important to you?
Never accept or do anything less than what's creatively possible.
What's creatively possible? I love that. That's great. Thank you, Rick. You're a good friend. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
Scott Wilson, Magic Word.
Yeah.
Podcast, Scott Wilson. Got it out.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.